You're listening to the Law of Attraction Radio Network.
Are you tired of the I can't mindset? The I'm not good enough mindset? Do you feel like your negative thoughts control your life? Well, you came to the right place. Because in the next 30 minutes, you will learn how to break free from the limiting mindset of anxiety, fear, victimization, depression, trauma, and self-hatred by reprogramming your subconscious mind. It's time to master your mind with Dr. Erica.
Hello, hello, good people, and welcome to Master Your Mind with Dr. Erica. Thank you so much for joining me today. I always start off with today is a good day. Everyone take a deep breath and release. Yes, we are easing into 2021, trying to really get our bearings and our grounding. Because we have a lot of groundbreaking things going on. And I just want to share with everyone that daily care for me is my goal for 2021. And that incorporates meditation, that incorporates journaling, affirmations, and of course, just staying positive with my attitude, with my mood, with my thinking, because we need this. We have to do this, especially as mental health professionals. And like I always say, mental health is human health, and we all need human health. And so with that, everyone knows I'm a daily user of CBD. I recommend it to all of my patients who have found testament and testimony to the benefits of CBD for mental and physical health. I also do coaching, counseling. You all know I love this talk show because it allows me to connect with so many wonderful and amazing people that have stories of their own to tell. And so I want you, if you're interested in learning more about CBD, check out my website at hemphappier.com. If you're interested in coaching with me or any other services that I provide, look me up at healthyminds.expert. I have a phenomenal woman with me today. I first became acquainted with her on Instagram through her Navipsych business. She is really an amazing woman. Her name is Stephanie E. Johnson. She is a master and a native of Atlanta, Georgia. She earned a BA in psychology from Dillard University and an MA in clinical psychology from the University of Northern Iowa. Stephanie's former professional experience includes supervising a clinical therapist for adjudicated youth, suicide prevention and intervention supervised group counselor for African American women, and over 10 years in psychiatric research at Emory University School of Medicine, Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences, where she managed several groundbreaking first episode psychosis in early intervention for schizophrenia studies at Grady Memorial Hospital. And Stephanie's interest in mental health advocacy in improving in the quality of mental health care provision stems from learning as a child that her mother was diagnosed with schizophrenia. And so her passion for this area in the field has led to other projects such as team lead and co-developer of the Emory University School of Medicine Suicide Prevention Continuity of Care mobile app, Relief Link. It's free on iTunes. And she is the founder and owner of a mental health coaching and consulting company, Navipsych LLC, where she specializes in being the mental health navigator for parents, caregivers, couples, and individuals who are seeking professional mental health help and those who are seeking fulfillment in their self-development. Currently, Stephanie is also the executive director of the Lee Thompson Young Foundation, an Atlanta-based mental health nonprofit whose mission is eliminating stigma related to mental illness. She is so in line with me. She resides in Atlanta, Georgia, with her husband, son, and daughter. Thank you so much for being here, Stephanie. I appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule.
Thank you so much, Dr. Erica, for having me. I'm really, really humbled.
Yeah, I love your story. And like I said, the navigating your mental health and the resources and access is something that is in so demand, especially right now, as we're all going through the transformation and change in our society and just everything going on. The anxiety is high. So, you know, tell us a little bit about kind of what drove you, you know, this passion that you have in helping people really get the care that they need.
So again, thank you so much for having me. I really, really appreciate Instagram for being this kind of conduit to connecting me with people, amazing people like yourself, so that we can have conversations like this. But this passion grew for engagement and navigating the mental health care system from me being a clinical research coordinator and working in clinical research. My total span of time working in that area or in that field was about in a total of maybe 7 years. I worked as a coordinator most recently for the last 5 years. And what I realized doing that work was that there were so many people that were doing what the healthcare system asked them to do. When they saw there was a problem, when family members or loved ones saw that there was a problem, they were seeking help. They just didn't know exactly where to go to get the help, but they were seeking it. They were kind of piecing it together, running around trying to get this number and that number and find a hospital. And usually what would happen is people would end up in emergency rooms or in jail. And with me studying psychology and psychosis, with me, you know, being very passionate about schizophrenia, a lot of the people that I met in research were African-American men. I worked on the inpatient unit to recruit people for these studies, and the majority of the people on the unit were African-American men. So, of course, being in Atlanta, a hub of African-American everything, I became more curious as to why this existed and where the gaps were. So when I would interview patients and their families, what I was seeing is that there were these holes, voids in the system where either someone would show up and they couldn't be seen that day, or someone, you know, would call and wouldn't get complete information about policy, procedure, how to actually navigate from one step to another step to get to the services. And oftentimes when I would interview parents or family members for these research studies, I would have to de-escalate them, kind of encourage them and empower them before I could even get to the questions of the assessments that I needed for the research, because they were so frazzled from the process to get their loved one into the hospital. So from that, and after working about 3 years on one particular project that ended, I had some time to work part-time, and I just was like, how can I use my skill to help people navigate this system better, to make it easier, to answer questions, to make them feel empowered for the steps they were taking. When everything in our healthcare system says, well, if you don't do it this way, then you get the blame for not taking care of yourself, or a parent gets the blame when their child is in crisis, their adult child is in crisis and needs help, and they call the police, they've called mobile crisis, and they're told, well, we can't come see you. It's not an imminent threat. You know, these are things in our system that frustrated me. It honestly kept me from working very deeply in that system. And so I was like, well, let me see what I can do here. And literally one day I've been praying about it. And one day I was sitting in church, and there was one of those days where the pastor was preaching directly to me. And I heard NaviPsych. And I said, ah, like navigating psychology, psychosis. And I wrote it down, and that was in 2012 or 2013. And I kept it in my wallet every day, thought about it every day for 2 years, until 2015, when I finally went to the Secretary of State's office and put in my, registered my company and started doing the work. And it was kind of gradual, because back then, of course, there was this big boom of mental health revolution. People didn't really get, what's a behavioral health consultant? What are you doing? How is this? Is it free? And is it? Nobody knew. It was not a market for it. And especially not here in the South, in Georgia and in Atlanta. And so I just kind of waited, networked, met people, you know, and I organically did it as a part of my role in research. When people would leave studies, I would help them find the next steps to making sure they remain engaged in treatment. And oftentimes what would happen and what I learned was that going a little bit above and beyond for those patients, when they disengaged, they would text me. When they needed refills on their prescriptions and they couldn't get anybody on the phone at the outpatient clinic, they would text me. When parents were worried because they were starting to see early warning signs again and they knew their adult kid had stopped their medication, they would contact me. And oftentimes we would kind of talk and they would end up either re-engaging back in their treatment or restarting their medication or keeping their parents involved in their process. And I just knew from that it was working. And whatever that needed to evolve into, that's what it would be. And so now it's fully thriving. I am over the edge and I'm really having a good time doing this work this way.
Yeah. Now, so do you have a group of counselors or therapists that help, or are you the one who just facilitates the transition to these different community-based centers? How does the service work?
So I'll tell you, as of September 19, 2019, I left my job full-time in clinical research, and I decided to take this role as the ED of the organization under the nonprofit, and then to work part-time for myself under NetAsych. And it's just me. And what I started doing was using Psychology Today. It's a robust, easy access, and pretty, you know, robust and efficient type of database full of all kinds of mental health professionals. So I can find anybody from psychiatrists to master's level professionals in all fields with all credentials. I have tried other databases that are out there. I test them from time to time, but this one tends to be the one that leads me the quickest to the answers that I need to find. And so usually what people do is they call me, I consult with them. And my website says 30 minutes, but you and I both know that to get real information to a therapist that will help you know that this is going to be a good fit for them, that these are the conditions or the circumstances and concerns and even personal preferences that they can help a person with or connect with, then it's going to take a little bit longer than 30 minutes. And it's fine with me. It's the work. And God told me when he gave me the name, do the work. The rest will come. And so that's what I do. And once I have that information, I then go on the search for the therapist. And usually I recommend a few. Sometimes it just so happens that I find someone who really fits very well. I contact them, interview them on the behalf of the client. And then if they are taking new clients, I set up for them to schedule a consultation and match them with that therapist or whomever that mental health professional will be.
I love it. I love that. And I think it is so integral to what people need, because so many times, like you were saying, the Psychology Today, you know, I'm a provider on that database. Mm-hmm. And so many people call me and they're exhausted. They're like, you don't know. You are the first person who answered the
phone.
You are the first person who answered the phone.
Yeah.
After I have called over 5-6 people leaving messages.
Yeah.
And the fact that I just sit there and I will give them maybe 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. They are so appreciative. Yeah. Sometimes I can take them because I have them on my caseload. Sometimes I can't. But the fact that I sat with them for 15 minutes just so they could say, thank God
I was able
to connect to someone.
Right.
Sometimes they don't need psychology because I'm a psychologist. Right. Sometimes they need a psychiatrist. And so it just saves them the time. And, you know, I love the fact, and perhaps this is one of the positive things that have come out of quarantine in 2020. I love the fact that people are reaching out for help.
Yes. Yes. I am overjoyed. I mean, I can't tell you. So I had a one particular client. She shared on her podcast her experience with my service. So I don't mind sharing her name. Is Tiffany Aliche, Brown Admission co-host. And from her consultation with me, she shared her experience on her podcast. And of course, I mean, it was literally in minutes that my email started dinging. I started getting bookings really, really quickly. And honestly, no, I wasn't prepared. But when God says move, you move. And I was like, you know what? It'll be handled. I'm not, the grace in it was the holiday time. And so people were already aware it might take them some time to find a therapist. It's the holidays, things were calming down. And we were in a year that they knew everybody was in need. So people really gave me grace to do the work, to take the time, to make sure that I found a therapist. But, you know, it was, you know, hearing my people over the phone, African immigrants who were either raised partly in Africa and then came to the United States, or their families were from there and they were raised here, but they still carry much of the deep cultural factors that kind of can sometimes impede mental health seeking, help seeking process. African-American men who were DMing me, who were saying, hey, I need to meet with you. Can I set up a session? I was overjoyed. Because now we can literally say that stigma is being eradicated around mental illness, around seeking help. And so changing that narrative, changing that story is what my work is about. Because from doing research, I knew that there were plenty of African Americans participating in research, taking medication, being retained in services for mental health, doing that what they needed to do to get on their two feet and stay healthy. But the rest of the country and the rest of the world didn't see it that way. We get all of the negative stories. So part of my passion comes from wanting to tell a different story, to share what's really going on in the change that's happening, because that is what locks in with people. When people hear more stories around success, around opportunities and options that are out there for them, they're more likely to do it. They're more likely to participate. And I tell people, my clients, when you reach out to me, when you come on my page, you're acting in self-love. You're giving yourself the control, the love, the help you need. And that's the key that's going to get you through your self journey. So if you can do that continuously through your process, you're going to be fine. And I've seen people who are in complete psychosis, frank psychosis, psychotic episodes do it. I've seen people who are just kind of struggling with stress in life do it. And it's like, you just need to know that somebody cares enough to hold your hand through the steps, give you the information you need. One of the most frustrating things for me working in a hospital setting was how much information professionals held close to the chest, as if telling someone the procedure of the hospital or their actual real diagnosis was too much for them. And most people will tell me, if they would just tell me the truth. And so talking to me like I'm six, then I think I might be able to do this. But you can't build trust if you're not sharing the knowledge and the information that people really do need. They can do with it what they want, but it's trusting them to be human enough to deal with what you have to say in the moment that gets them to the next step. And I learned that from doing the work and research with the patients and listening to them and observing how many times they would say, well, they just didn't want to hear what I had to say, or they just didn't listen, or I tried to get some help, but nobody would answer the phone, or I showed up to the clinic, but I wasn't on the schedule that day, so I got turned around. And my thing is, if you call me, if you make the effort, you're going to get something out of that effort. There's no reason why someone should not get a return on that much effort when there's so many obstacles in the way. If we can reduce obstacles for people in healthcare, people would rely on it, would trust it more. We're seeing it right now with COVID, that people did not get reliable information early enough. And here we are.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I love when you say self-love and self-care, because I often say, in breaking the stigma, is mental health is human health.
Yeah.
Why? Because we, particularly in the brown and black communities, our African American community, we have not been given permission to love ourselves.
Exactly.
We are so worthy.
And many
of us are enough.
Yes. And many of us don't even really know true happiness. We don't really know what true love deeply means. And so it's one of the reasons why when I end my consultations, I thank people for acting towards themselves in love. That acknowledgement of you taking a step, reaching out to me, sharing with me a stranger who is not going to be your mental health professional, your story enough for me to help you. That is what, for me, is what it's all about. It's why I came into the field, to see people shift. And we in the field have to see those shifts, every single last one of them, every small one, as huge. We cannot diminish the effort that people take. We have to acknowledge that it doesn't have to look the way we think, the way we study, the way we do research. It doesn't have to be that way, because we are the ones that hold the information. And if we can merge that with people's effort and tell them that, and define it for them of what it really means to show love to yourself, what self-care really looks like, that it's not going to get your nails done all the time. Sometimes it's realizing you need some help. It's the recognition. It's the admission. It's the commitment to trying. Not being successful right away, but trying. That's where health journeys begin. no matter what it is, whether it's losing weight, whether it's getting mental health help, whether it's going to the doctor for a visit, a follow-up, because you are afraid of what the result is going to be. Making the effort, trying, is the act of self-love. And that's the message that I think we could use hearing more often when we talk to people.
Yeah, I love that message. And I always tell people, if you were to just take a small step, just do something small, but do it every day consistently, you won't recognize yourself at the end of the year or the end of the month.
That's
and
right.
That's, to me, that's what self-love is. Mm-hmm. It's committing to do something different.
Yeah.
Something small. Every single day.
Yes.
Because
absolutely.
You're worth it. Because I'm worth it. Because you're enough. Because I'm enough.
Right.
And like you say, being honest with ourselves and being aware that we have a lot more power than we've been trained and taught to believe we have. And so
that's a huge piece of this. A lot of my consultations end up being about the belief systems that people carry with them across their lives and challenging those belief systems, especially when it comes to this demographic of younger individuals who are having a lot of success very early in life. And it's even helped me understand the shifts of humanity and careers and access to resources that's just different from even when I was in college, and I'm 39. But to see where people are in the ability to attain more, it's very easy. But nobody tells people, when you write that business plan for your new idea, please write your self-care plan in it as well. Because no matter who you see that's a success, they've gotten there, but there's been some major deep life sacrifices along the way. And the unfortunate thing about this ease of access to this type of growth very early is that if you are doing so, like most people, when we think about most what we consider material success, most of them had all this baggage they were taking with them along the way that was never resolved, that was never dealt with, and it was just kind of pushed under the rug. And they thought that the success was going to automatically put them in alignment with whatever was going to make that disappear somehow. But that's not what the case is. You just add on more burden you know.
It is so ironic that you said that, because I just finished writing this article. It was talking about what is success. Mm-hmm. And I said success, it's titled Success is an Inside Job.
Yes.
Because to me, what success is really about is learning and loving yourself unconditionally without judgment.
Yes.
And so you've got to unpack that stuff.
Right.
You've got to deal with the trauma. You've got to deal with the emotional baggage that you are still carrying. Yes. If you've never dealt with it. Because like you were saying, physical possessions are fine and great. But when you go within, are you happy with you?
Right.
Do you love you? Do you take care of you?
Right. And you have to know that, because the more you gain, the farther your boundaries push out from you. It's hard to set boundaries on what your needs are, what you really need to feel fulfilled, if you're not really assured of what it is that you're reaching for. And the more things that become barriers between you and your boundaries are, the more hurdles you have to jump over to get to yourself again. And that is something that I'm seeing a lot of, that I'm happy that some people are calling me, because they're experiencing what that pressure feels like to get to a certain point and then not be able to fully experience it in a place of themselves that feels joy, that feels accomplishment, that feels fulfilled and feels satisfied. And I think I can continue to say that it goes back to people really understanding you have to take yourself along the way. You have to kind of be willing to not rush to that success, that it is something that if you do it really fast and you get to the goal, what's left after that? Either you build in the time to help bring yourself up to the place of this level of your attainment and your accomplishment, or you end up really seeing what it's like to have to manage all of that and what you've attained at the same time. And it wears people out. I mean, I'm looking at, I even wonder, when I scroll on Instagram and I see all of these kid entrepreneurs, and I'm like, what are we really doing to their development? Like, great understanding of life survival skills, but what are we teaching them about their ability to sustain themselves over time? What is this need that we have to gain so much so early that we are willing to risk childhood and all that childhood has to offer in the experience of getting to adulthood? It kind of, it's a lot of factors that I think play a role there. I think it's great for people to, encourage what is natural propensity for kids, what is naturally, but there's some part of it I'm like, what is that going to be like later down the road for those new professionals who will need to study that behavior, understand what it's like to treat those aftermaths or those residuals of that kind of life? What does that really mean for our generations to come when it comes to what we're attaining in our life and the reasons why we're attaining it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, again, we really have to look at and help individuals look at why they're wanting a certain goal. Mm-hmm. Those priorities, really what is valuable mm-hmm. to them outside of something material.
Right.
And so it comes back to self-love. It comes back to self-respect. It comes back to self-happiness, but internally, not from external sources.
Right.
We've only got a minute and 30 seconds.
Oh,
I didn't
want
to interrupt you, but please tell my listeners, where can they connect with you? And just any last words of wisdom you'd like to share.
Well, thank you. So I can be found at NaviPsych, www.navipsych.com. That's NAVIP PSYCH.com. And I am on Instagram. Navi Psych is my handle on Instagram. And I just really am appreciative of what 2020 did give me. We've heard so much about the detriment or the loss of 2020, but I hope that people can look at 2020 at what we are gaining and what we've already gained. For me, it was a break from being a working mom for almost 10 years and not getting a break. I enjoyed my daily walks that were uninterrupted, and the clear cobalt blue skies and the freshness of the air and nature, and having some time to just be with my family without juggling traffic in Atlanta or, you know, schoolwork or work. I mean, it was my deepest prayer answered. And I'm appreciative that we are at this place now where there is no more denial of what is real in this country, what is real to mental health and mental illness, what is real and necessary for change.
With that, Stephanie Johnson, thank you so much. I appreciate all that you do.
Thank you, Dr. Erica.
You are welcome back anytime.
Thank you very much. I would love to
come
back.
Thanks for listening to Master Your Mind with Dr. Erica. We will be back next with another terrific episode that will allow you to master your mind. Please visit hemphappier.com for more information about Dr. Erica and CBD oil. See you next week.